Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, you were on vacation. You went out to New York. You were able to watch that New York Knicks collapse in person. How'd that go over?
I actually did not get to see it in person. The Knicks are, they are Lakers East in all the wrong ways, and they do not credential blogs. So SB Nation cannot get a credential to the game. So I was like, oh, darn, I don't get to watch this team in person. Guess I'll have to explore Manhattan with my girlfriend.
That's a much better way to spend a weekend.
I did not exactly push back when they're like, and then our buddy Aaron was like, hey, I can get you tickets. I'm okay. I'll watch it at a bar. I'll have an old fashioned in my hand and talk my crap from there. I'll be all right. And I do want to see. I've never been to Madison Square Garden, so I don't want to act like that was like I want to do that, and that would have been cool to do. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to do that at some point. But yeah, I was not exactly like heartbroken that I didn't get to see him in person.
I wouldn't want that to be my introduction to MSG.
Right.
That would leave a bad taste in my mouth no matter what. I'm actually planning on going to the game. I haven't been to a game this year. I'm planning on going to the game Friday when D'Angelo Russell can knock out the Lakers.
you're like a weird like masochist and troll mix. Like that's a real like sweet spot for you, is like to torture yourself while torturing others.
It's the only way to deal with pain, right? Is to share it.
You gotta disperse it like in water, right? Yeah. If there's enough water, like not everyone gets as sick. I get it.
I gotta find a way to find a D'Angelo Russell jersey between now and Friday. I'm kidding, kinda not really. Today's topic is going to be a fun one, though. I spent, not yesterday's show. Yesterday's show was with Bill Oram, and we talked about Luke Walton and Magic Johnson, LeBron James. It was a fun conversation. You guys should check it out. For the previous show, the show before that one, I spent a lot of time talking about shooters and the type of situations that good shooters, mediocre to good shooters, need to be to at least reach what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. And in the shower today, I was thinking to myself, I actually think I can broaden this out to a lot of what has plagued the Lakers as a whole this year. There are systemic issues here. There are inconsistency issues. There are obviously injury issues. And then in talking to Pete before we went live here, he actually talked a little bit about Luke Walton making a pretty drastic change based on the personnel that he was given. So today's show, instead of rolling with the tidal wave of everybody trying to disperse blame for the way that the season has played out among people, I think it's a lot more productive to identify structural and systemic issues, because those are actually fixable. People are going to come and go and they're going to change whatever.
Yes.
But if you actually get to the roots of these problems, I think that's when you can identify ways to actually improve the situation itself. So that's going to be the focus of today's show. Reminder and a little bit of news for the podcast network. We have partnered with Himalaya, which is a huge marketing and podcasting company. They get the word out there for podcasts, and they're allowing us to partner up and market the shows across a broader platform. So Google Himalaya and podcasts and stuff like that, and you can see what's going on here with the Locked On Network. We're really excited about that. And let's dive into this thing, though. So I talked about how Reggie Bullock was shooting 38% with Detroit, comes over here and is shooting like 29 or 30% at this point. Mm-hmm. Last year, all of KCP, Josh Hart, and even Brandon Ingram, though it was on lower volume, and Kyle Kuzma were all above 36% at least. Kyle Kuzma was at 36, and then KCP and Hart were upwards of almost 40%. And all of them have seen significant drops this year in their ability to shoot. And I think that comes from, A, those guys aren't elite shooters, which is not not groundbreaking analysis, but they are mediocre to good shooters, streaky to good shooters, I think. And for those kinds of shooters, you need to have optimized situations. And I don't think the Lakers, whether it was a personnel concern, systemic concern, inconsistency because of injuries to the personnel concern, all of these things came together and really affected the way that those guys were able to shoot. Would you roll with at least the basis of the Lakers didn't do enough to make their mediocre to good shooters as good as they could be?
Absolutely. In plain English, the Lakers have spacing issues. And part of that is a function of personnel and the guys that they brought in. And then part of that is a function of the offense that Luke tried to install to make up for the fact that they don't have great spacing in terms of individual players. And he accidentally ended up exacerbating that problem. Mm-hmm. So I do roll with you on that. And I think the fundamental issue there is spacing.
At first glance, everybody's going to look at it and say, well, duh, we've known that the Lakers have had spacing issues all year.
Yeah.
But all these problems, so the problems that plagued the Lakers shooters this year have also plagued, say, JaVale McGee for the amount of space that he catches on his way to a basket.
Yep.
It obviously hurts Rajon Rondo, who is, if he isn't dispersing the ball out to shooters, there's no real point in having Rajon Rondo on the court, right?
Right.
And yeah. and it just it has this domino, not dynamo effect, as I tried to say before the show, a domino effect that it had across the entire organization, and it somewhat damned the Lakers right from the get-go.
Yeah, and I think we'd be well served to talk about what does that mean to not have spacing? How does it show up? How does it impact? Like, when everybody across the board, their percentages drop, you know, there's something systemic. It's not like, very rarely do you have like eight guys have a down year at the same time without there being a bigger issue that's external to them.
Yeah. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick second here, pay a couple bills, and when we come back, we're going to identify what it means to have poor spacing, how that transpired over the course of a season in which, because you don't see this very often. This is not how it usually goes, right? Where an entire roster of decent to good shooters just forget how to shoot. So we'll come back to that here in a second. Today's show is brought to you by MyBookie. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year, my personal favorite. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is a perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed like last year? And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? I hope not. If you know the answers, or even if you don't, most of us don't, MyBookie is a place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. Though again, nobody likes that guy. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is they pay you out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Now back to the show. Most fans think of spacing in a purely geometrical way, I think, right? Where you have gravity from somebody who the opposing team would consider and scout as a good shooter, right? As a floor spacer. Now, you might have guys like Rajon Rondo and Lance Stephenson who shot well this year, but no team is going to alter their game plan to make sure that Rajon Rondo isn't getting clean three-point looks, right? And then what you had over the course of the season is the guys who might be game-planned as such, because of those things that we identified at the beginning of the show, teams could get away with maybe leaving those guys a little bit more than they typically would. And in and of itself, that's going to mess with a shooter, right? They know they aren't doing their job. But what... let's identify this in terms of steps. If a defender is allowed to take one or two steps off of a shooter, what impact does that have everywhere else on a court?
That's a great question. I'm going to preface it with a few years back, I went to the Nike Coaches Clinic in Vegas that they have every year, and it's a great event. And they have a bunch of different college coaches normally from both men's and women's basketball presenting, and they'll present on a topic. And Greg McDermott is the coach at Creighton. He's Doug McDermott's dad. And his a big subtopic of his presentation was closeouts. How do you teach closeouts? What are the purposes of them? And just everything that there is to know about closeouts, basically. And he said that he teaches three types of closeouts. There's the and this is a few years ago, right? So these were guys were more prominent names in the NBA at the time, but there was the Korver closeout. And the Korver closeout is when a guy is an elite shooter but can't really drive to the basket effectively. And you, for obvious reasons, you get all the way up in him, right? You chase him off the line. You get chest to chest. You don't give him any space. You encourage him to drive to the basket. The second one is the Rondo closeout. And this is what that was called at that time, too, right? That is the opposite of a
turn around and
right, basically. So the in-between one is you want to be about an arm's distance away on your closeout. Like, that's the ideal space. If you get too close, the guy's going to blow by you on attacking the closeout. If you don't get close enough, he's open. So that's kind of like the general rule of what coaches say. Get an arm's distance away and get a hand up. Get your hands high. And so the Rondo closeout was two steps away, right? You don't entirely ignore him, but you encourage him to not drive and wreak havoc off of that. And then the third one was the Kobe closeout, which is the one in between where a guy can burn you either way. And you need to be very disciplined in that, like, one arm away, and so that you can react to whatever Kobe or that type of player decides to do. So we have a lot of Rondo closeout guys, including Rondo himself. And
yeah,
what that does is that really reduces reduces passing lanes in a lot of ways, where when guys sag off, what does that do? We only think of that through the lens of how he's defending the shooter, but how does that impact the other four guys? If you're cutting from the weak side, or if you've got some screening action on the weak side, and there's somebody sagging a little bit off of Rondo, then that guy's a little more in the passing lane. That means that your passing window is just a little smaller. There's football analogies too, when you've got, you know, you don't have a Rob Gronkowski or, you know, Odell Beckham, those type of guys that draw so much attention that all of a sudden the guys on the other side of the field are a lot more open. It's the same type of concept that comes with that. And what happens from a personnel perspective, and we'll get into the coaching perspective later in terms of what Luke tried to do to counteract this, you have way too many bodies in the paint, and everything just becomes a slightly more narrow passing angle, cutting window, your screens. It also discourages screen setting because, you know, you set a good off-ball screen for a guy, he catches it and shoots it and misses it, then all of a sudden you get a little less enthusiastic. And then one last thing on that is your screener always – you want him to be a threat. He's not an offensive lineman, right? He's setting a screen and then ideally getting open for himself.
Yeah.
Well, if you're setting a screen on our shooters and you're not like really worried about, even the guys that are okay about it, there's nobody on the team where you're like, maybe Bullock, and obviously he shot poorly, but there's few guys on the team where like, holy crap, don't give that guy any space. That guy sagging off and letting the guy go out to the three-point line, the shooter go out to the three-point line, means that your screeners and your slip screen opportunities are reduced. And then your screens get worse from there because, well, I'm setting all these screens, but I'm not getting the ball off of them. Yeah. And it's just human nature to just not set as good screens as a result of that. So it becomes this avalanche, this domino effect where everything builds upon itself, and then you end up with what we had.
The way I would also look at it, so the Rondo closeout, if a point guard is able to sag off of a shooter like Rondo, they aren't typically as long as other defenders on the court. But if you have a wing whose defender is also a wing, an athletic, you know, 6'6", 6'8", type guy, right? Mm-hmm. And they're able to take one of their steps off of a shooter, that wreaks so much havoc because that guy's huge. Like that, the type of steps that we're talking about here is huge. And when you just get into, you have multiple guys like that. So in games where KCP and Hart weren't shooting the ball well, and Kuzma weren't shooting the ball well. You're talking about three of the world's best athletes who are able to just kind of sag off a little bit and sink back into the key. And you can just imagine the type of havoc that would wreak on any type of offense, let alone one that exacerbates this issues.
And look at it from the other end of the spectrum of a team like Golden State or Milwaukee, teams with elite shooting and good systems. The middle of the floor is so wide open for them. Yeah. Like, watch their games and see how open just the middle of the court is, because everybody's a little more hugged up on their man, a little more worried about their shooters. And then you can exploit that, the fact that the middle of the floor is open. And now you got opportunities going to the basket for a guy like Giannis. That's, you know, MVP type of recipe between that and his individual talent. So we're at the opposite end of that, where the middle of the floor is so crowded because we just don't have the shooters to be able to make them pay for that.
And the last point I want to make here before we go to the next segment, we talk about Luke's offense specifically. Think about, so LeBron right now, there's a conversation. I fired off a tweet where I said LeBron looks washed, right? And I think he's still recovering from that groin issue. But a great way to make a player like LeBron look washed is to allow defenses to have one or two guys in the key against him, you know, devoted to watching him on every single possession. And, you know, you talk about the avalanche effect. If you take away, so the Lakers offense essentially became LeBron. And then when he is being taken away to a certain extent because of that lack of spacing, because those wings are able to have a foot in the key or a foot off of, or an extra foot or two off of their guy. Well, now the best aspect of the of what would have been the Lakers offense is now also at risk, and there's just nothing the Lakers can do.
Yeah, it's not neutralized entirely because he's LeBron and he's going to get to the rack and get his, but it's about the worst version of it you can see. I was actually kind of encouraged by LeBron this year from seeing the surrounding issues in terms of his like what he's still able to do, because him with his immense talent was put in the least ideal conditions for his talent possible. And I still thought that he was pretty damn effective, all things considered.
Yeah. I do think one thing that the Lakers are probably, I mean, we'll see what a more rested up LeBron James looks like next year. I think, it's one of the things I'm looking most forward to next season. But one thing that I think the Lakers might have to really think long and hard about is the idea of giving LeBron the ball at the top of the key and letting him go to work.
Yes.
I don't think they'll be able to do that next year. He doesn't have the same spring in his step that he once had, that he could just take literally anybody off the dribble in that situation.
And I mean, it's something they'll still be able to go to, but it can't be something they rely on that much, right? Like, he needs to be, we were talking about this recently, like, free throw line and below more often. Yep. That doesn't mean you never give him the ball at the top of the key and let him do his thing. But both between the spacing and him getting older, and like, he's so good as a big man. And we'll get more into this. I know I'm going to make videos about this over the summer, but you can really get more out of him and Brandon and him and Lonzo. Like, it's not just LeBron. It's how does he fit in with the other guys? Because the biggest problem with the young core and even LeBron and just all of this together, even not just the guys they brought in, like, outside shooting is not a strength for any of the key guys that we have.
Yeah.
It's not the best part of LeBron's game. It's not the best part of Lonzo's, not Brandon, not Kuzma. These are the most important guys. And the fact that none of them can hang their hat on outside shooting as being a strength of theirs, in fact, it's a weakness in most cases, that's something that's going to have to be resolved one way or another.
Should be nice to have D'Angelo Russell. We're going to... I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. You know what? I'm not sorry anymore. It has hurt to watch D'Angelo Russell this year. And it has hurt to watch that while we still have the stupid narrative that the Lakers wouldn't have LeBron James without D'Angelo Russell. Like, they very easily could have had him. They could have had, now, you know, things get a little tricky. Would you not have Josh Hart? Would you not have, you know, they don't have Thomas Bryant anyway. Would you maybe not have Kyle Kuzma? Whatever. They could, there is a very feasible situation here where the Lakers would have Lonzo Ball, they would have D'Angelo Russell, they would have LeBron James, and maybe Kyle Kuzma. Probably Kyle Kuzma.
No, they'd have Brandon and they'd have Kyle Kuzma. And the Lakers had the 27th and 28th picks in that draft. They had Kyle Kuzma rated higher than Josh Hart. And if the Lakers acquired the 27th pick in that draft in the Brook Lopez, D'Angelo Russell trade, and they had the 28th pick from the Lou Williams trade. So we know that Kyle Kuzma was going to be on the board at 27 by virtue of the fact that the Lakers picked him there. And now, is there a guarantee that Brooklyn doesn't take him there? No, not necessarily.
Actually, they've come out and concretely said they weren't going to take him there.
Sean Marks has said something along those lines. But for the sake of argument, right, let's say that the Lakers don't know that at the time, right? Even if that's true, the Lakers don't know that. And they really, really want Kuzma. And for some reason, they weren't afraid of him being taken at 26 or 25, right? But 27, damn it, they had to get him at 27. What's the cost to move up from the 28th pick to the 27th pick?
Definitely not D'Angelo Russell.
It's a future second round pick. You know what I'm saying?
And like,
so yeah, it'd be LeBron, Ingram, Lonzo, Russell, Kuzma. That's like, that's a core that they could, and Julius too, by the way, that, which they could have recently. Anyway.
It just highlights to me, it highlights what's at stake here for this front office this summer. Right? Like, we've talked a lot about blame and all that stuff, but if the Lakers don't walk away with at least a Kemba, right? And even Kemba and Jimmy Butler, those kinds of guys,
it's better than nothing, but it's less bad. Like, if you look at it more long term, like, is the next 4 years of Kemba worth more than the next 4 years of Russell and Julius Randle?
Right.
Like, Kemba's really good, and Kemba's better than D'Angelo is at this point. But Kemba's also going to be 29 soon,
and he's like 5'11".
Right, and D'Angelo just turned 23. And you didn't just lose D'Angelo to get to the point that you're at. You also lost Julius. Mm-hmm. So would you rather have Julius at 24, I think he is now, over the next 4 years, and D'Angelo at 23 over the next 4 years, than a Kemba Walker or a Jimmy Butler at 29 or 30 years old over the next 4 years? And to me, the answer to that's obvious. But you can't throw good money after bad money. The Lakers getting a guy like Kemba Walker this summer would be a huge win, even if in totality they took a step back. It would make it a lot less bad.
Yeah, I'm definitely not saying don't go get those guys. I'm just saying I'm walking away from it like, man. You know how sometimes, are you a poker player at all? Do you ever play poker?
I did at one stretch of my life. I got into it, so I can talk it a little bit.
So you know how there are some hands where you walk away from it. You won the hand technically, but there was a lot more money that you could have taken off of that player.
Yeah, you know? That's a good analogy.
I would walk away from it like, fuck, man, I could have that guy's whole stack right now. You know. Mm-hmm. Anywho, we're going to take a quick second here, and Pete had a really good topic, I think, on and something that I don't think has been talked about nearly enough this season in regards to Luke Walton and the system that he's been running this year. So hang tight for that. Kind of miss poker. Poker was fun.
Poker is fun. We should do some Lakers Twitter poker stuff.
Oh, man.
Can't have Kranjic play, though. He'd do some card counting shit and whoop us all. So.
We'll have to figure something out like that. Like, we'll just, you know, like the Dodgers have their ping pong tournament. We should have like a Lakers Twitter poker tournament.
That'd should have fun. A ping pong tournament at your place, too.
Hey, easy. I don't have my ping pong table anymore.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we moved.
Oh, that's tragic.
What we got to do is we got to convince Jen to let me get a ping pong table back in that house, in this new house.
All right, we have an action item. Let's do it.
All right, so let's talk about Luke Walton's system here. And we've alluded to it a little bit. I don't think it's been touched on fully in the way that you put it before the show. So I'm just going to hand over the reins to you and let you do your thing.
All right, so you're Luke Walton, it's July 2018, and you have this roster, you're excited that you have LeBron James, but you kind of have these pieces that don't fit, and you're wondering, what the hell am I going to do at the center position, right? All the stuff that's come out recently, it's stuff that you and I have heard in the background that we can't necessarily report, right? But it coming out, right, that like Luke was like, what the hell's going on? Like, what am I going to do at the five, right? That is not something that's new. That is something that he felt back in, you know, in last summer. So you're him, and you've got this roster. Now, how do you approach doing it? Luke Walton changed his offense this year. He did not run the same offense this year that he ran the last two seasons. Now, part of that is going to be, yes, you're going to change your offense to accommodate LeBron. But part of it is because a lot of spacing walked out of the door in Brook Lopez. Julius Randle provides spacing, not as a shooter, but as a ball-handling big who can get from the top of the key and get all the way to the basket and make passing reads out of delays, down screens, and things like that.
I wish we would more people would identify spacing as shit coaches have to game plan for.
and you have to game plan for Julius Randle on the perimeter, even if he's not, because Julius is such a good ball handler that he'll eat up that space that you give him. Ben Simmons is a guy who does this too, right? Where, okay, you're going to play off of him, right? Because he doesn't shoot. Fine. He's going to dribble at you, dribble in one direction and get you to commit and then spin the other way. And he's got a layup at the basket or it's a drive and kick type of opportunity. Julius does this all the time. Ben Simmons does this all the time. So you can still be a perimeter threat while not being a shooter. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, Lamar Odom was great at this too. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of spacing's walked out of the door, and you're Luke Walton, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what do I do with this to maximize this? So the first thing that they went to was the UCLA 1-4 high type of offense, where you've got one guy at the top of the key, and then four guys across the free throw line extended. And that's an old UCLA type of set. I would argue that it's not an NBA set, not something that you run on a regular basis. But the rationale for that behind coaches, the reason that coaches go to 1-4 high is that you lift the defense and then you provide opportunities to attack around the basket because all of the defenders are lifted as a result of that. Now, the problem with that is that the Lakers' two main scoring options and threats in the half court are LeBron James and Brandon Ingram. And their best attributes from that respect is the ability to drive to the basket. It is difficult to drive to the basket when you've got eight bodies, the four guys across the free throw line extended, and their respective defenders in the way of that. Mm-hmm. Your driving lanes are only going to the rack baseline if you're playing one of those wing positions. So Luke, while trying to lift defenders and provide opportunities to get to the basket, actually exacerbated the problem of the Lakers did not have enough in the way of dribble penetration lanes from enough different places. If you watch a team like Milwaukee, who's a really fun team to watch that I would encourage Laker fans to watch over the course of the playoffs, not just from the perspective because Giannis is freaking awesome, but also how Budenholzer goes about his business. They've got a five-out type of offense, which they can run in part because they have shooters. But what five out means is you've got five guys beyond the 3-point line in terms of that's their spot. What you do is you create a bunch of space in the middle of the court, and you've also got four out and three out. Three out is very old school basketball. This is 80s and 90s basketball where you've got two guys below the 3-point line. By running 1-4 high, you're essentially running a three-out offense because two of your guys are at the elbows, right? And it's lifted, right? And so your two guys are on the wings instead of down on the low post. Although three-out, two-in is normally one guy up top, two guys on the wings, two guys in the post. But you've still got two bodies on offense in the middle of the paint. Mm-hmm. All of this creates congestion. Along with that, my biggest complaint about Luke Walton is teaching player reads, where you've got guys who, the biggest modern principles is do not hang out below the 3-point line. You want to cut, you want to attack the basket. That is still the heart of effective offensive basketball, just as it was in the 80s and before. In the past, we threw it into Hakeem Olajuwon, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and that was how you got penetration, how you attacked the basket. Now you do that in different ways, but you still want to do that. It's more difficult to do that when you've got all of those bodies in the way. So the Lakers were not able to attack the basket well enough because they did not have... Hey, Charlie Film Room saying hi. Sorry about that.
he's not a fan of the 1-4 either.
Not a fan of the 1-4 either. So anyway, all of this ended up making it made for a difficult situation where the paint was crowded. Shut up! Sorry.
Hey, listen, everybody. That's impressive. Your dog's better than mine.
No, he's not listening at all. He's just waiting to strike again. So, sorry, I usually do this without the dogs, Anthony, but, you know, I had a situation today. So.
No, here's my thing with the 1-4 in the NBA, and it kind of gets back to what we talked about in the last segment as far as the type of athletes that you have in the NBA, is that you have a lot of wingspan in modern defenses, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's a great point.
And so, like, when you go with your 1-4 up there, more often than not, if those defenders were just to stand arm by, like, just raise
their
hands,
they could go from sideline to sideline.
You could probably go sideline to sideline there. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's why when I see NBA teams line up in 1-4 sets, I'd like to see, maybe Krangis, maybe you have this type of information too, how effective 1-4 sets tend to be against NBA defenders, just because those athletes are so ridiculously good. Because you're not even – so one of the things that, you know, in high school basketball especially, when you don't have those kinds of athletes, 1-4 sets can work fairly well, because if you just – if the point guard isn't applying enough pressure, or if – somebody falls asleep up there, you can throw it over the defense with enough time for the ball to come down and allow for the person to catch it and actually make the basket there. But, like, you're talking about lateral length here or vertical length here that I just don't think you can take advantage of in the NBA.
It's very difficult, and you have to be running a lot of action that, like, closes up space and then opens up space, right? Like, the problem is the guy up top would make the pass to the wing, then he'd receive the screen on the UCLA cut. Mm-hmm. If he didn't get the ball, then he'd receive a double screen on the weak side. But the problem was, on the weak side, those guys would hang out like 15 feet away from the basket. There are so many plays where guys are hanging out like 15 feet away, and that just ruins your spacing and your driving lanes and all that, along with all of that arm span and that wingspan and that length, that it's just something that builds on each other that makes it really difficult. So when you combine that with what we talked about in the first segment about the personnel and how defenses defend individuals, you've really created a situation where it's like the most difficult situation possible for your drivers.
Yep. Yeah. It's been tough to watch, because, like, you think about it and you say, the Lakers have shooting problems. They had shooting problems on the way into the season, right? And they tried to fix it with a shooter in Reggie Bullock, but in just adding a shooter, that doesn't address the root of the issue here.
It was also too little, too late at that point. Like, if you get a Reggie Bullock type at the beginning of the season, maybe you have a little more to work with as well. Even though, like, that wouldn't have been enough to overcome.
Yeah.
And I think a guy like Bullock can shoot the crap out of the ball, and a lot of his misses have been of the wide open variety that are not the coach's fault. But when everybody comes here, even Muscala, and, you know, when everybody's percentage drops, it's a sign of something bigger.
Yeah. And so, you know, for the Lakers heading into this year, to me, what's more important, or at least as important as identifying who deserves the most blame, it's what can those who deserve that blame do to rectify some of those mistakes that they made this year. And it's too late for Luke Walton. We probably know at this point he's getting fired at the end of the year. We know where this is heading. But for, you know, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, they have to identify, okay, we didn't put the team in the best place to succeed here. It had an ill effect on the entire roster, LeBron James included. Which, like, if you figured out a way to, with your own roster, negatively impact LeBron James, give yourself a pat on the back.
It's quite an accomplishment, and yeah, it's tough to do. Bro, you know how hard it is to admit you're wrong? Not just you, just all of us, right?
Yeah.
Like, what I'm worried about is a guy who's had as much success in basketball as Magic Johnson.
In life.
Being like, well, Luke was the problem. My idea was still good.
Yeah.
Just this dummy over here didn't know what it, you know. And so I really hope that they are able to identify these issues that we were talking about, that it's not just a Luke issue, even if Luke definitely contributed to the problem and changed courses. But I'm concerned that they won't.
Yeah, I feel like if Magic, and there's no way he's listening to this, but if Magic Johnson listened to this podcast, he would have skipped ahead to the part where we talked about Luke and didn't listen to the rest of the show.
For sure.
Hey, Magic. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. It's a weird schedule this week, so I believe, Pete, you're going to be coming back tomorrow after the game, right?
Let's do it.
Oh, no, the Lakers don't have a game tomorrow. They don't play again until Friday, when I'll be at the game in a D'Angelo Russell jersey. Have a good one, everybody. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Again, shouts to Himalaya for partnering up with the Locked On Network. We're really excited about what this means for everybody involved.